Golf Smarter number 134 for July 8, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Back by a huge demand, the Putting Zone with Jeff Mangum.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast. Today's show is brought to you in part by CaddyTips.com. Get professional caddy advice to your next round at courses in the United States, Scotland, and Ireland. And by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter for details. The original mission of the Golf Smarter Podcast was to gather information from the thought leaders in the industry. I truly believe that nothing lowers scores more than confidence, and nothing adds strokes like making constant adjustment to your mechanics. Obviously, we've been lucky to move beyond course tours and the mind-body connection shows. But since the beginning in January of 2006 till today, few episodes have received more feedback and requests for follow-up than putting coach and theorist Jeff Mangum. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hey, Fred. How are you doing out there in sunny California?
It's been a long time since you've been on Golf Smarter, and we have gotten...
Whose fault is that?
It's my fault.
I've been here.
Oh, no. You know what? You travel a whole bunch, dude. You are on the road a lot. Actually, it's amazing how much time you spend on the road.
I've been on the road since the 1st of March.
Wow. Well, the fact that we got you now is a good thing, and people should stick around because we have more to announce at the end of this conversation. But I wanted to talk to you because we get so many letters about putting, so many emails, and so many comments about your theories and what you've talked about on the previous. Boy, you were on a long time ago. It was like 2006, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
September.
Wow. Oh, a long time. Well, I'm glad to have you back. But I got a couple of emails recently, and we actually answered one of these. Kenny Nicholson answered one of these on the Golf Better program. But, you know, he comes to the putting thing from being a retailer, which is great, and he has great opinions. But I thought this would be a great question for you, and I want to throw this one out. It's from Jason Sure. Jones of Florissant, Missouri. And he mm-hmm. his basic question is, how does one learn to read the greens?
Oh, great question. Great question. I just recently listened to your last one with Al Reichow, by the way.
Well, thank you.
How to read the greens is intuitive. What you do when you read a green is you predict the future, and you have to predict the future accurately, taking into account reality. So let me stop all this generalization and get down to brass tacks.
Yeah, you're the first person to ever said anything about being putting your mind in the future when we're talking about about anything in golf. Everything is being in the present, being in the present. And you're breaking the mold.
When you read a putt, it's all about the future.
Yeah, man, you're good.
Okay, all right. 20 years of neuroscience research that I've been engaged in tells me one big thing about the brain. The brain is basically a predictor of the future. It's a flight simulator for behavior and action. And what that means is you can't get along in the world doing things unless you know how things that you do are going to work out before you do them. Otherwise, you get hurt or you fail. So reading green is basically one of those that's a normal thing that you do. What actually happens in the brain is when you look at the area right around the hole, you predict how the golf ball will roll over that last piece of grass and go into the hole successfully. That'll show you a little piece of curvature, the final piece of curvature, and I call that what is required for success. If you start with that, that's just a simple intuitive process of imagining how the ball will actually roll into the hole the way you putt it. Once you get that little piece visualized, that needed for success piece, then you back up to figure out the rest of it, the start line and your sense of touch. That's how you read a green. All right. Fundamentally, you look at the hole over the last about 3 feet or so, and you say, how will my ball at its given speed roll over this tilted surface with this green speed? And anybody can do it. It's just intuitive. You just sit there and you say, well, how's it going to get in the hole? What's it going to look like? What path is it going to follow on a little curve into the hole? If you imagine a slightly uphill right to left breaking putt, maybe 15, 20 feet away from the hole, nothing real complicated except it's the surface is tilted. And if you looked at the surface tilt as a clock face with a straight uphill line running from 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock through the hole, that being the orientation of the tilt of the surface in gravity, if your ball were, say, at 4 o'clock on that clock face about 15 or 20 feet away, you're going to have an uphill right-to-left breaking putt. If you stood a few feet below the hole, on the low side of the hole, and looked right at the 3 feet going into the hole and imagined the rolling speed of your future putt crossing that final 3 feet with the slowing down speed and toppling in the hole the way you want it to and the way it usually does, that visualization movie will show you exactly the curve that you anticipate or predict. And you can actually draw it with your finger if you like. You just reach down on the ground and draw 3 feet of the final entry path of the rolling putt.
Is that legal?
No, it's not legal. I'm just saying.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I want.
But you can't. You can't draw a line.
I was going to say that too. It's not legal.
Okay, good.
You can't touch the line of the putt at any point. But at any rate, it's just like pointing at the ground and watching the last 3 feet of the roll of your future putt go into the hole. And the whole key to that is touch. If you have touch, you have a consistent delivery speed to the hole on different putts of different lengths, even on different greens and on different grasses and on different green speeds, even using different balls and different putters. A person with touch has got touch, and they just simply get used to their tool or their putter or whatever putter they're using that day, and then they get used to the green speed. That's because in golf, the golfer's job is to deal with reality. It is what it is, and the golfer has to be appreciative of what it is, somewhat like an aesthetics sense of tasting a cookie. If you look at a green speed, you don't want a concept about how fast it is. You don't want a number. You don't want a measurement. You don't want a comparison of today and yesterday or this green and other greens you've played. You want, most of all, is a wide-eyed, sensitive appreciation of exactly what it is, whatever it is. And that's like tasting a cookie more than anything else. It's an aesthetic sense. Okay? Now, that's a good analogy.
I like that one.
Works pretty good when I teach.
Yeah, I bet.
Okay, so you don't want to be thinking about green speed. You want to be knowing and appreciating green speed in terms of your rhythm, your body, your sense of presence on the green, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So that's what you're doing when you have touch, is you have a sense of the green speed and you're able to use your tool and your ball and the sense of the distance, any uphill, downhill effects, and you can deliver golf balls to holes consistently with the same delivery speed. And that's how you can see that last 3 feet. If you don't have touch, you don't have a consistent ability to predict the future. See that?
Yeah.
But if you do have touch, you're probably the only golfer for miles around who has the ability to predict what you're going to do when you actually pull the trigger and make a putt. So that's fundamentally, reading a green requires good touch. No touch, no consistent ability to visualize that last 3 feet and see the necessary ending of a successful putt in the hole. So let me stop just a second before we go much further on how to read a putt and say, get touch. And explain just a little bit what I mean by get touch. Touch is, in terms of the delivery speed of the ball into the hole, it's the way the ball falls over the lip and goes down in the hole and stays there. If you deliver the golf ball too fast to the lip of the cup, it won't go in at all. It'll skip over.
Yep.
And if you deliver it too fast, there's only certain wide paths across the hole that will tolerate that speed, and the short paths across that hole won't. And if you miss the long path, even though it's possible for a slower speed to go in, it's not a catastrophic speed, but it's still too much speed. You're going to miss the main long paths that you have for that ball to drop. It'll skip out on the edges and miss as well.
Let me stop you for just a second so you can define for me what you mean by wide paths and short paths.
Okay. Well, a golf hole is 4 1/4 inch in diameter from side to side. Mm-hmm. And it's about 5 inches deep. It's no real rule about how deep it has to be. There's a rule about how deep any liner inside the cup or inside the hole needs to be. The liner needs to be at least 1 inch below the level of the dirt. So there should be 1 inch or more of dirt before you ever get to the top of a plastic liner inside of a hole. But generally speaking, holes are about 5 inches deep. They're 4 1/4 across from side to side in a center cut putt. If you direct your ball directly across the center of a golf hole and assume that it's level, that the surface there is level, so there's no tilt of the back of the hole towards you or away from you. It's just level. Mm-hmm. If you went straight across the middle, that's the widest possible path you could take, and that path is 4 1/4 inches.
Okay.
For the ball to actually stay in that hole, it has to be going slow enough so that gravity has time to suck it down 1/2 of its diameter before it hits the back wall. If it sucks it down more than 1/2 of its diameter, that's all to the good. But any less than 1/2 of its diameter, and the bottom portion of the ball is going to hit the far rim of the cup, and that's going to present a wedge shape to the far rim, and it'll pop out. You have to let gravity have enough time to suck it down at least to the equator or further deeper into the hole before it ever hits the back wall.
And you know what they say about gravity?
Right.
It's not just a good idea. It's the law. It's the law.
It's the law. Okay.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Like,
go ahead.
It's like click it or ticket. Okay. So what you find out is that there's a range of speeds across the hole that define good and bad touch. If you think in terms of revolutions per second of how fast the ball is rolling right when it reaches the front rim of the cup, 9 revolutions at the center cut pathway is simply too fast, not going to drop. Just okay. The laws of physics won't let it.
Right.
As you slow down to 8 revolutions, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, this is what happens at the hole. By the way, 8 revolutions per second is about the same as a tractor trailer truck beside you on the interstate with the big tires when you're both going about 65 or 70 miles an hour. So it's a pretty fast, 8 revolutions per second is a pretty fast roll of the golf ball. Mm-hmm. So it's possible for that to stay in, but only if it's a center cut putt. Okay.
Yeah, now I got you.
As you start slowing down, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, the hole widens. The hole for an 8 revolution putt is only one dimple wide. That's your whole target. If you miss to the left or right of that one dimple center cut path, that 8 revolution per second ball is not going in the hole. But as you slow down to 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, it basically widens about 1/2 inch every revolution you go down. So 7 is about 1/2 inch, 6 is about 1 inch wide, 5 revolutions per second is 1.5 inches, 4 is 2 inches, 3 is 2.5 inches. 2 revolutions per second is 3 inches wide. 1 revolution per second is 3.5. And 0 plus a little final piece of roll is about a full cup, or a full hole is available. So the slower you go, the more hole is available to actually capture the ball, because you have given enough time for gravity, even on those side shorter pathways.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
When you let's try to translate that speed of 9 revolutions per second in distance. So if my ball is coming right up the center and is rolling at 9 revolutions per second, mm-hmm. when it hits the front edge of the cup, it's right. going to have too much speed to drop in. It won't allow gravity to take over. It'll pass the hole, correct?
It'll probably pop a little bit on the back edge.
Right. How much farther past the hole will it go at that speed?
That's
saying
actually,
it's a level, you know, you're not going downhill or uphill.
Okay, if it's a normal country club green and weekday speed of about 9 on the stimp meter, it's probably going to go about 9 or 10 feet, easy.
Wow.
It's way past.
Right. So, I mean, because there's been lots of talk about you want to aim, you know, so you want to put your distance at about 12 inches past the cup.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't want to do that at all.
Let's break that myth right now.
Yeah. The instincts don't need that, and it's crazy.
Okay.
The instincts, they just say, you want to put it in the hole, let's go.
Yeah.
You want to put it safe in the hole, let's go.
Okay.
You want to get it over the front lip and safe in the hole, let's go. Whatever you want. And what happens is that the instincts know a lot more about this physics than the conscious brain of golfers. The instincts have to live with this stuff. They have to adapt to it and figure out, you know, how it works. And the human brain doesn't always, the human mind doesn't really follow the instincts very well when it does stuff like this. The instincts figure this out. And let me just tell you how it figures it out. The bottom line is that the instincts, without any golf instruction whatsoever, are going to settle on a delivery speed of 2 or 3 revolutions per second at the front lip, which makes about 87% of the hole available, which gives you a wide target. It always gets there because it's got some left over. It's got 2 revolutions per second or more by the time it reaches the front lip, so there's no question of never up, never in, and that kind of thing. It actually always makes it.
Okay, and again, distance-wise,
If it misses, yeah. then that's the third thing. Okay, there's 3 factors. Did it get there? How wide is the hole? And how far past does it go if you miss?
Fabulous.
2 to 3 minimizes how far past it'll go while maximizing the width of the hole, and it always gets it there, so that's not a problem. So that's what you want. You want the least comebacks and the widest hole possible while you get it there. Those 3 factors, and the instincts know how to do that. If you missed on a country club green in midweek when it's stimping a 9 and you arrived at the front edge at 2 revolutions per second, but you missed, it's going to go about 2 or 3 rolls past, 10 inches, 12, something like that.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome. You're not trying to do that, though. You know, what you're trying to do is put it down in the hole safely and keep it there. And that's what everybody with instincts gets to that same speed no matter what, so long as golf instructors don't mess them up. The reason is it's not personal. It's physics. Golfers don't have a choice about this. They can either have a smart delivery speed or they can have a dumb one. It's just physics. But if you leave it up to the instincts, everybody with instincts eventually gets to about 2 or 3 revolutions per second at the front lip. So why don't you get there sooner rather than later?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so this
so,
is what.
So then,
this
so what, I guess that's why we're talking about that last 3 feet, right?
Yeah, that's how you read it. Yeah,
and so you want the ball to be approaching the hole at its widest possible. So if it's a little bit break right or a little bit break left, it's going to be coming in from a different angle than where you're standing. Is that what you're
right.
saying? Okay.
Well, it's going to be coming in on a curve for sure.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Because there's break there. Now, if you start talking about taking break out, we'll get there in a minute, but let's talk about reading the putt first.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you have a delivery speed, Now, let's say you have a faster delivery speed because you're a hack golfer and you just hadn't matured enough to be as slow as Lauren Roberts or Ben Crenshaw or something like that.
Be nice.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm trying to speed everybody up. you know, if they want to be that way, that's fine. But I want to speed people up.
Okay.
So that's not smart. But let's say you've got an aggressive putting style. Tiger Woods abandoned his. It took him 7 years on tour to kind of wise up, but he finally did. He doesn't have an aggressive putting style. And if people think that, they need to look again because he said so several times that he slowed down. He's learned to love tap-ins for pars. Well, kudos to him. But if you have a
wait, as opposed to what? Learn to love
as opposed to ramming it and jamming it 17, 18 inches past the hole.
Oh,
being aggressive on the theory that you're going to make more one putts and to heck with the second putts. You can make them from 4 feet and all that. That's the way Tom Watson used to putt.
So learn to love the tap in.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you got a wider hole, less of a comeback. See, there just isn't any conflict between the safest way to putt and the best way to putt. That's what people always think, that there's something in conflict there, that if you're not aggressive, you're not making the best chance of sinking it. But that's actually wrong. The best way to sink a putt happens to be also the safest way. And the safest way to avoid a long comeback or a narrow hole when you get there, or a small chance of it going down in a hole, happens to be a slow putt, one that's also safe. So there's no conflict at all. And if you get to the level of Ben Crenshaw and Lauren Roberts, you would see that when they take a putt, they give it what they consider to be its best chance of going in the hole, which also happens to be the greatest chance of avoiding any kind of three putt, and all they end up with is a tap in for par on the high side of the hole if they miss. It's always high and a little off on the speed. It's never low. Never miss it low. Okay, so you have a touch speed, and if you have an aggressive touch speed, the line that you visualize will be uniquely yours. But you better know what your speed is, or else you won't be able to visualize it. If you have a slow speed, it will be uniquely yours, and it will be a higher break. A slow speed always results in a higher break. So if you see people, there was an episode recently of Johnny Miller calling a putt by Tiger Woods. He said, oh, that putt's got at least 2 feet of break. Well, Tiger Woods aimed 4.5 feet of break and made it.
Yeah, and that was at the end of the Open, right? That was
Saturday or something? Johnny Miller is not known as a great putter.
You must love that.
He doesn't know stuff like this, okay? Uh-huh. I'm sorry, Johnny, you need a lesson. You could be playing on the senior tour today if you actually call somebody and know how to teach you how to putt. But at any rate,
you heard it here first, folks.
I hope he listens, because
too.
he's a great ball striker. He's just not any good at putting. All right, so you have a speed. If you're an instinctive putter and you don't pay attention to a lot of golf instruction, you'll have a nice slow speed that's always adequate to get it there. It gives you a wide hole and very small comebacks. And that means you have a higher break. But at any rate, whatever your speed is, you're going to visualize according to how you putt. And that's how you see the last 3 feet into the hole. Now, to answer the guy's question, how do you read a putt? That's the first thing you got to be able to do. Have touch and be able to visualize and predict the future with it. All right, now, what do you do when you see that little piece of 3 feet of curve on the ground? You can draw that 3 feet into the hole the way you would see the putt arriving, and then you work backwards from the hole by retracing that curve and following it all the way back to the ball. And as it gets back closer and closer to the ball, it'll eventually stop curving at all, and it'll be straight. Even if it's only at the very last, when it finally gets to the ball, that it straightens out, at some point it's going to straighten out. Once it's straightened out, that's called a tangent. A tangent is a straight line that fits onto a curve at any one point. And when the curve is no longer curving but is also straight, then the tangent and that straight piece of the curve, they're the same. And so the very beginning straight line of your putt is the start line. That's where you aim your putter. Okay? There's always two issues in making a breaking putt, line and speed. Well, now didn't we just say that you have to have speed in order to read a putt?
Sure.
All right, now here's the trick that nobody seems to get. Because you use your delivery speed and your touch when you read a putt and see the curve, the only speed that is appropriate to use when you pull the trigger is the same speed you use to see the curve. There's only one speed possible ever for anybody to play breaking putts with, and that is the usual speed. They're not reading putts with five, six different speeds in mind. Right. They're reading putts intuitively with one and only one sense touch, the usual sense. And that's a great, great thing. Jack Nicklaus never really understood this. He always would read a putt 1.5 balls left or right or something like that. And then he would go back and 15 feet away and go into a little cocoon and wait for the inspiration to dawn on him on exactly how hard to hit his putt. Remember, he would say things like he couldn't watch other people putt because he didn't know how hard they were going to hit it. That isn't the way it works. There isn't any wondering how hard to hit a putt. When you've read it with speed A, stroke speed A is the only possible speed of putting. And the reading speed that you use is usual, so you got to putt with the usual. If you putt any faster than usual, it goes through the break. You putt any slower than usual, it doesn't go into the break. You just have to see how magical that is, because it takes a whole ton of trouble out of putting breaks. You never do anything except the usual. Here we go. Okay, now, so you have a start line, and now you have a sense of how hard to hit it. You got everything you need. There's more to get out of it, but basically, once you've got your putter aim, you just pull the trigger with your normal rhythm. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Wow. Jason probably didn't expect a 25-minute answer to his question, and I'm sure we can do another 25 minutes on this as well.
Well, the main thing is you got to visualize with your touch.
Right.
Right. Right. There's an extra little trick you can do.
Okay.
When you see it, you stand below the hole, you see that last 3 feet coming in, you trace it backwards out of the hole, back over that 3 feet, and then it straightens out at the ball. Once it straightens out the ball, you extend a straight line, that very straight line at the ball, you extend it back towards the hole. It's going to miss the hole because it's going to go on the high side, right?
Right.
Well, where does it stop for purposes of the end of the line for touch? Is there a stopping point to your aim line? Yes, there is. Wherever the aim line from your ball comes back up and misses the hole to the high side, wherever that line crosses the fall line above the hole, that's where that's your touch reference. Right there, where those two lines intersect, you could plant a flag, and then you go back to your golf ball and you say, this is a straight putt from golf ball to flag, and the flag will be some number of inches above the rim of the cup, straight uphill on the fall line, which we earlier said was the same as a 6-12 line, straight uphill through the hole. You're on the 12 side of the cup, somewhere so many inches up, where that start line intersects the 12 line. If you planted a flag right there and went back to your ball and said, aim straight, putt straight, pretend it's not uphill, pretend it's not going to slope, pretend it's putt-putt, dead, flat, level, straight putt from here to that distance where that target is, that's all you do. Just pull the trigger. So all breaking putts end up being straight putts. And there's a combination of the curve and the curve that generates a complementary line and distance. Another way to think of it is where you have that little intersection of the start line and the fall line above the cup, so many inches. If you were to dig a second hole there, 4 1/4 inches wide, and pretend that that was dead straight flat level putt from ball into the second hole, your sense of touch is going to be roll ball straight into second hole over the lip 2 or 3 revolutions per second as usual. That would be exactly the right speed for that ball to follow the actual curve down into the hole.
I have so many more questions that I want to ask. And here's one of the best things about podcasts is that you can go back and listen to this again, because you just provided us with such a wealth of information that there's no way, you know, unlike, you know, like a classroom situation, there's no way you can absorb it all at once. Well, this has already been recorded. You can go back and listen to it multiple times and pick up these nuances that Jeff's talking about.
I can try to settle it, you know, to do it, you know, even more schematic. Let me run through it real quick. All right.
Well, actually, we don't have time.
Okay. Well, I can give it, how about 30 seconds?
All right. You got it. Go.
Okay. All right. Ball lands on the green. You say, where's the fall line? Oh, it's over there. You go straight up through the hole that way. My ball is at 4 o'clock. That means it's going to break right to left. I go up there and I see the last 3 feet in. I draw it back to the ball. I shoot a line straight up into the fall line and I plant a flag. Go back to the ball. I aim at the flag. I putt it straight at the flag and I bump the flag, and that's it.
And you win.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Well, I still have 1,000 more questions that I want to. I mean, like, I have things like, and don't answer these now. But I mean, okay, these are the kind of questions that come up to me. Like, normally, uphill, is it going to go right to left or left to right? Where will the break occur? How about this? Practice putting greens. How important are they? How about your grip? How many different grips are there? Which grip is better? Or do you use the fat grips if your hands can't get around it? What about the position of the shaft onto the head? How about the length of the putter? That's got to be important. And, you know, what about standing at both sides of the hole when you're lining up the putt?
You know what I'm doing while you're going through all these
questions?
You're
not taking notes, I hope.
No. My basic reaction is, okay, there's a snake in the backyard running around and it's getting close to your baby, and you got a stick, so kill it.
Okay.
You're talking about how do you grip the stick? No, you just grab the stick and kill it. Okay. Anything you grab. When you act with instinctive skill on a green,
all this stuff is
it's important to some people, but it's not really important to the skill.
Not important to the skill.
Not really.
Well, you know, but I'm sure those are the questions I had. I'm absolutely positive, because I've been communicating with them, that the audience has even more and more relevant questions than I
do.
So here's the big surprise. Here's the thing that I'm so excited about, because I have questions and so many other people do. Okay. It is with great pleasure that I am here to announce that starting Friday, July 11th, Jeff Mangum will be on Golf Smarter Tips every week, giving us advice, tips, insights, and answering your questions. So please make sure that you check out Golf Smarter Tips on a weekly basis. We have 4 different instructors for you now. We're talking about the mental game, swing mechanics, short game, and now putting. You are going to become a better golfer. There's no question about it when you get these lessons. Jeff, I'm so excited that you've agreed to join us.
Well, I like it. I'm really excited too, Fred. You have a great service here, reaching tons and tons of golfers, and it's a very friendly format. I just love that.
Well, thanks, buddy. And please send your emails if you have any questions. And if you have a specific question for Jeff that you want him to answer on Golf Smarter Tips, go to golfsmartertips.com and click on the button labeled Ask the Experts. You'll have choices depending on which teacher you want to answer the question. But if you want theputtingzone.com, and that's Jeff's website, or you want answers from Jeff, click on Jeff Mangum. And we'll ask the question and see if we can get your question on the show.
Load them up, boy.
Roll them. What's your line? I love this line. Go, give it to us.
Oh, together we can learn how to roll them and hole them.
It's all happening here. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Fred. Thanks a lot.
Golf Smarter number 134 is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere. As a listener to Golf Smarter, you may have heard Tom Wishon appear on this show a few times. Well, his unabridged reading of the book, The 12 Myths That Could Wreck Your Golf Game, is available for free when you sign up to audible.com today. It's a great way to get more reading done when you don't have time to read. Again, the first taste is free. Go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Now, speaking of Tom Wishon, he's scheduled to be on the show again in the near future, and that brings up an idea that was prompted by a number of emails back and forth with a new listener named Van Brenner. Many of the interviews you hear on the Golf Smarter podcast are recorded weeks in advance of their publication. Actually, I have anywhere from 2 to 8 interviews in the can at any given time. So if you keep your eye on the Golf Smarter blog, whenever I book an interview, I'll post it on the blog along with their website address. This will give you the chance to review their content and submit questions for upcoming shows. I don't claim to know the best questions, but together, we can ask better questions. So just as a tip, next week I'm scheduled to interview both Tom Wishon and Jim Waldron, both previous guests of the show. Again, check for the blog on how to get more information about them and click on the Hey Fred button to submit your questions, and it's all at golfsmarter.com. Today's closing quote is brought to you by caddytips.com. Receive professional advice on how to play many courses in the U.S., Scotland, and Ireland. Download, print, and play better when you're armed with the information from the pros at caddytips.com. As a Golf Smarter listener, you get 50% off all your downloads. I promise that you can pay a lot more for yardage guides that give you far less information on how to beat a course. Go to caddytips.com/golfsmarter for more information. That's C-A-D-D-Y tips.com. caddytips.com/golfsmarter. Actually, Terry Kaler, our brand new short game instructor on the Golf Smarter Tips podcast and author of the WedgeGuy.com blog, he provided today's press release that was recently sent out by the Montana State Department of Fish and Wildlife. So I wanted to share this with everyone in our quote section. Now, the Montana State Department of Fish and Wildlife advises golfers to take extra precautions and be on the alert for bears while playing the Gallatin, Helena, and Lewis and Clark National Forest golf courses. They advise golfers to wear noise-producing devices, such as little bells on their clothing, to alert but not to startle the bears unexpectedly. They also advise you to carry pepper spray in the case of an encounter with a bear. It is also a good idea to watch for signs of bear activity. Golfers should be able to recognize the difference between a black bear and a grizzly bear's droppings on the golf course. Now, black bear droppings are smaller and contain berries and possibly squirrel fur. Grizzly bear droppings? Well, they have bells, golf clubs, and sunglasses in them and smell like pepper spray. If you have any quotes, comments, suggestions, or questions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Hi, this is Terry Kaler, president of Eidolon Golf and blogger at thewedgeguy.com, inviting you to listen to my short game lessons each week on the Golf Smarter Tips podcast. I'll provide insights on how to improve your game from 100 yards and in, and answer questions submitted by golfers worldwide. If we use your question on the show, you'll receive a free wedge from Eidolon Golf. Tune in for details. The Golf Smarter Tips podcast is free on iTunes or at golfsmartertips.com.